Yeah, this should be like kind of a rambling thing,
yeah,
and that gets edited.
It's just, I mean, we're not really used to being on microphones or headsets
no.
that we have.
I mean, the other movies will be easier because we like drop
yeah.
a quote.
But
and
this is
stuff.
It. This
we
is
crap.
It. We are. Did you,
I don't want my.
You're on your phone.
No,
it's our first episode, and you're going back onto your phone.
This is where I left my notes.
Oh my god, 21st century man. But we're here. We finally got our acts together, unlike our film. But.
Oh, come on. Oh, now officially nobody's going to listen to us.
Yeah, but we've got a podcast.
Yep, somebody gave us microphones.
Yeah, Target for like 30 bucks a piece or something like that.
You ready to do this?
Yep, here we go.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock! I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy, that's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm on cool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hello and welcome everyone to the very first edition of P.S. I Love Hoffman.
Yes!
Our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always on cool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today we'll be chatting about Philip Seymour Hoffman's first feature film, a little dandy titled Triple Bogey on a Par 5 Hole.
I just gotta tell you, this is going pretty good so far.
I think so.
Yeah.
First things first, though. We'd be remiss if we didn't thank the guys over at Cage Club, Joey Lewandowski, Mike Manzi, for inspiring us and letting two clowns like us on their podcast network. If you haven't listened to any of Nick Cage podcasts on their Cage Club or any of their other network stuff like Keanu Club, please check it out.
Yeah, that's it's good that you wrote this because I would have been totally non-thinking to thank these guys. But thank you guys. Thanks, Joey. Thanks, Mikey. I don't think anyone's ever called Mikey. He's Mike Manzi.
Maybe his.
I love
his
you, Manzi.
Family.
Thank you.
So yeah, big thanks to Mike and Joey. That's
Ooh.
For sure.
Ooh.
Now, with that out of the way, it's our maiden voyage, and we kind of wanted to let you know what to expect on this podcast. So, Kyle, what interested you about the career of Philip Seymour Hoffman? What do you love so much about this guy?
All right, so let's just go with probably the first film I ever saw him in was Twister.
Oh, yeah.
And I read online recently that's the film that he was, like, most noticed. Like, still, in polls and stuff like that, people say that's, like, his most recognizable
role. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's you know, the man won an Oscar. It was nominated for Oscars multiple times.
Fantastic
actor. But Twister, yeah, exactly. But honestly, so, I mean, as a kid, what is that, 96, I think, Twister, 97 or something like that. Great comic relief, fun action summer film. That was my first throw-in to Philip Seymour Hoffman. But in the end, after just getting older and seeing more of his films and being like, wow, this guy is just brilliant. You know what? You just look at him and I go like, that, you know, not that I want to be an actor, but that could be me. He looks like a guy that I would hang out. He really does look like a guy that I would hang out with. And so, you know, they're always like, oh yeah, you know, Tom Hanks is a cool guy, blah, blah, blah. But he's still like, he's a little goofy looking, but he's a beautiful guy. Philip Seymour Hoffman, yes, he's an attractive guy, but as far as his performance, the man could do it all. I literally think a master of the stage and screen. Unfortunately, never got to see him on stage.
No, it's a shame.
But man, like, and he directed a film. He's done rom-coms, comedies, blockbusters, dramas, some of the greatest dramatic performances of all time. And, yeah, the guy was just one of, if not the greatest character actor of all time. And I say that with full steam ahead confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of what you said. For me, because we lost him so soon, God, what a dark day that was.
It was just about 3 years ago, because it was right before that shitty Denver Seahawks Super Bowl.
And the New York one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because we lost him so soon, it gives us, like, a unique opportunity to examine a legend's full career.
Mm-hmm.
A career that, like, kind of occurred in our lifetime, at least.
Totally. Yeah, that's a very fair point.
And look, would I rather have him around right now? Would I rather have him making more movies? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. However, I don't know, this is like the first guy who, like, I saw kind of get better and better and better through movies, and then we just, like, lost.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just, exactly. Like, the man just was, he was just like a nonstop tea kettle.
And, you know, I mean, we're just blessed to be in, like, the Hoffman era, really. And I guess we'll be celebrating his gift to us with this podcast.
Yeah, I think we might be doing some fun stuff over the course of his film career.
That's, yeah, what can our newfound fans expect, Kyle?
You know, we're going to be doing some contests here and there with prizes. Fun. We're going to invite some great guests, some great guest hosts. We know some interesting people that, you know, if they know film, if they know your basic things, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman pretty much became a household name, and unfortunately, especially after his tragic death, but still, like, people, I've been talking, and we've got a good little dossier of people that want to come on this program.
Yeah, people we think you'd like hearing from.
That's
just our frank opinion. We'll be doing a lot of them on our own, and it's just going to be an absolute pleasure watching these films again, watching them in the order that they're done, and just talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time we spend talking about film anyway.
Yeah, I think he has something around 65 films or something like that. I mean, you know, you can't go by IMDb credits. You've got some random things in there. We're not going to be doing, like, you know, I think technically, for instance, the first time he was ever on screen was pretty much, I think, 95% of the acting population was on Law & Order.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be sticking mostly to film here.
Yeah.
Not so much television.
Feature film. Because that's the man that we know and we love.
And it's our podcast, so.
Exactly. So don't, you know, don't call us and be like, oh, he was on a great episode of blah, blah, blah. He did have a television series that he was working on. I think it's called Happy-ish. And it was, it was continued later on with Steve.
Not to be Black-ish, right?
No. Okay. Why was anyone confused? That was
the
Black-ish.
Part.
The ish? Put an ish at the end of the thing, it automatically gets confused with Black-ish?
I don't know.
I'm getting really Jewish right now? Am I talking this way? I guess so. You can hear ish? No, so there was this show, Happy-ish, which I think was then continued with Steve Coogan, I want to say, for some reason, recently, last spring or something like that.
Oh,
I really
that was
didn't
his
follow.
Show?
Yeah, but it was Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think, filmed the pilot. So I never saw it. I think I will check it out, but we are, again, going
didn't
to
know
stick
that. See,
to
we learn on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
And I
it's like
be,
reading yeah. Rainbow, but not reading, and there's no rainbows here.
Well, yeah, to be clear, we're not really taking an analytical approach to this. This isn't going to be a film school seminar. This is not going to be. You know, you're sitting in a classroom here.
Yeah, we're not James Lipton.
If you haven't figured it out by now, we are self-admitted fans. We just plain love this guy, and we just want to have some fun.
I got a picture right here that came in the Blu-ray case of The Master, one of my favorite. I can't wait till we get to the episode.
Stop spoiling
it. It's not spoils. I'm not saying
might
anything.
Hate it, I don't know.
No, I love it. I love all of his films.
Oh.
But, or all of his performances. Uh-huh.
Yes,
say that.
Yes.
That's but The Master, one of my favorite films of all time. But I've got this lovely portrait that was done that came in the Blu-ray case. And I have it framed, and it's magnificent. So, that's, you know, film nerds, and love it.
So, without further ado, Kyle, tell us a little bit about Philip Seymour Hoffman's first film, Triple Bogey on a Par 5 Hole.
Well, first of all, what a title. What a great title that is. It's Triple Bogey on a Par 5 Hole is directed by Amos Poe.
Amos Poe, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there we go. So I'm not perfect. I can't read right, but whatever. He actually, I went on his IMDb. I saw he directed Alphabet City.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have seen that.
It's a great talk about, like.
It was right before this, right? It's close.
Like five. No, I think a little bit more. I think like at least like.
Well, what year?
5 to 7 years.
What year is this one?
This is 91.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess I'm wrong.
But Alphabet City, it's cool. I'm totally going on a tangent. But it's a really cool movie. In today's world that we have our neon noirs with like Ryan Gosling, like Drive and stuff like that, this is a really cool movie you should check out. And I believe it's on Netflix. But this movie that we watched, Triple Bogey on a Par 5 Hole, we watched on YouTube. We don't have any sponsors yet, but if there is one out there, YouTube, we'd love for you to be our sponsor. But anyway, a little synopsis of the movie. It's about a screenwriter who's hired to observe the children of deceased thieves on this luxury yacht in which they reside on that circles Manhattan. That, to me, was pretty much the best way for me to kind of sum up.
Yeah, I mean, how much screen time does Hoffman get in this one?
It's like he's on screen a minute. And it's like a little in-between conversation between his buddy, the one son of these thieves, and then the writer of this like screenplay.
Yeah, so not
no.
Not the most Hoffman intense film, but we're going through them all. We gotta discuss it. We gotta start somewhere. By the way, I like how you suggested YouTube would sponsor an audio podcast.
Why not?
Because their market is video. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the site.
I'm trying to... No, I'm not at all.
Yes.
You know.
You're familiar with other kind of video sites, aren't you?
He's insinuating you porn. dirty man right here. But,
hey, I know you too well.
So, okay. So, this film, 91, what are we, 4 years old? Didn't see it then?
No, I didn't see it then. Probably wouldn't have. I don't think you and I were toddlers strolling around St. Mark's. Which
how fantastic would that have been?
I still may, you know what? I probably would have remembered it. I was going to say I wouldn't have remembered it, but St. Mark's, 1991.
Oh, my goodness. What a great.
You know, my mother, I always tell you, my mother grew up on the Lower East Side, walking to school, jumping over bums on the Bowery.
Fantastic. Like,
but this film movement came out of there.
Pre-Giuliani.
Oh, screw that Giuliani for cleaning up New York.
Yeah. I like the colorful days. I like the hooker-filled, Times Square. Now it's Disney World.
Regardless, this is kind of the end of this era of, like, gritty village, Lower East Side films.
Yeah.
Where they would just make these films, essentially, to be shown in, theaters down there.
Sure. Like, you had kind of said, this is in the same vein as, like, a Jim Jarmusch. Like,
yeah, Jarmusch comes out of this world.
Yeah, he carries the torch. This guy, Amos Poe. Really hasn't done, again, I didn't, you know, he hasn't done much, but
no.
You got your
certainly
Jim Jarmusches out there, but then obviously they go on and they really have their films, Sundance and, more like festivals, and this might have played, but again, it's
kind
beautiful...
of pre-festival era, and of course there were festivals out at that time.
You know what it still even felt like? It felt like, I mean, these New York, directors... Scorsese, Mean Streets, just those films that he captured, these little corners, these little pockets of New York, and just really focused on it. So it's kind of interesting. This one totally, I mean, hey, if you got a boat, I don't know if they rented it. He must have known somebody with that boat. That's a cool boat. It's like it's not a boat. It's a yacht.
It's a yacht, yes.
To quote a random movie out there.
Good reference. If anyone can name that, they win one Philip Seymour Hoffman DVD.
Woo!
Name the quote that Kyle was referring to.
It's not a boat. It's a yacht.
Yes. Okay.
But yeah, so
accents aside.
I just have this feeling from like a guerrilla filmmaking like mind or whatever that he knew somebody with a really cool, it might have been his, I don't know, good for him, but knew somebody with this like cool yacht and was like, let's just film a movie on it and circle around Manhattan, get these great landscapes. I just love, it's full frame, black and white, shooting on film.
Do you think it seemed like Super 8?
I'm
pretty sure I saw that in the credits. You want to make a quick bet?
The Super 8 was, there's home video footage.
You're right, it was.
This is probably...
The footage.
It looked pretty clean.
So what Kyle's referring to, most of the movie's in black and white,
mm-hmm.
but they keep flashing back to...
It's home video footage.
They
definitely, it must have been someone's home video. It's not like they shot home video footage
movie. But that definitely doesn't
I think you would have gotten like some actors that looked a little bit more like their, like the eldest daughter doesn't like look like, the found footage or the home video footage.
Who knows?
Whatever. But they just do this really cool thing where they go back and forth between our film and this home video footage when the kids are reminiscing about their deceased parents. So you liked
this movie?
Yeah, I liked it. It was different. It's very minimalist.
Well, that's the thing. We're not seeing this so much anymore. Even the indie, and I'm doing air quotes, guys, indie films these days aren't really like indie
films.
No,
they're multi-million. Maybe it says on IMDb.
Look, the budget was probably high because of the cost of film at the time.
It's
not high as in production value than we expect today.
No. It has this great quality to it. I mean, unfortunately, I've got a degree in communication arts, digital filmmaking. There you go, people, right there in the title, digital filmmaking. They just didn't, once my school decided to have a film program, they were like, well, let's just keep it digital because film is too expensive. I can appreciate that, but I did one time work on a set where I was actually changing canisters, and I felt like I was on an episode of 24 because of how, critical, I felt like the guy in Die Hard 3 trying to defuse the bomb in the kid's school because of the amount of pressure you have of, exposing film and just ruining all those takes and everything like that. So it's just, I loved seeing a film that I feel like a peer of mine like could have made, and it's just got this raw film quality. New York, I can relate. Like, I've been around this, you know, the southeast and west tip of New York on a boat before. You know, it just covers pretty much from like south of what, the Manhattan Bridge, and then kind of scoops around lower Manhattan.
Yeah, that's what we see. I think the implication might be that they
or just always constantly circling, but yeah.
Mostly see the shots from there. I mean, just obviously for their production value.
Yeah.
I mean, from a writer's perspective, I mean, just for those of you who don't know, Kyle's more of a production. We dabble in both, of course.
Sure.
But Kyle definitely knows more about the production ends of things. From a writer's perspective, it was a really inspiring film, because I always get bogged down when I'm writing a screenplay or I'm writing a story where it's like, oh man, I'm never going to be able to make this. I'm never going to have enough money to make this. And it's like, even things that I have are minimalist. Still, like, if you want the quality that you see on TV or in the film, it's like, you're not going to be able to do that. But it just harkened back to an era where you just freaking filmed your story.
Yeah. It had a great language to it.
Yeah, and it almost felt like a play at times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you filmed your story and you just did it. And you just didn't care about how much money. I'm sure he would have loved to make millions upon millions of dollars, but it was more about the art of it. It's a very artsy film without being crazy. There was a narrative.
Yeah. Definitely the most famous guy in it is Philip Seymour Hoffman, but this is his first like film appearance. But then, you know who they had in it? I love this guy. Robbie Coltrane. He plays the... I love it, actually. In the scene, he plays the family attorney.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it. The shadow presents on the wall, attorney at law.
Yeah.
Like, what a creep.
Where do I know that guy from?
Okay,
I made a note.
So,
I'm like, where do I know this guy from?
He's in two of the Pierce Brosnan James Bonds. And then he's, I've seen all of them, but I'm not good. Harry Potter, he's the big guy. The big head, the one that Dan Pichel looks like.
reference that nobody will know. Hagrid?
Yeah.
He's Hagrid?
Yeah.
Oh my god, you're
and
right.
In the Pierce Brosnan James Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in Tomorrow... No. I don't know. I know he's in... I don't know. He's in the third one of Pierce Brosnan.
Oh my god, that is Hagrid.
He plays the Russian, and he's a caviar factory and stuff like that.
I did not...
Like, yeah,
I knew I recognized his face, and
He does this great like, you know, Italian New York accent. He's got like a thin like John Waters mustache.
Wow, so Philip Seymour Hoffman isn't really the known guy in this. It's
no, I mean the biggest name at the time was probably Robbie Coltrane. And you want to know? I'm so happy. Did you catch this other person? What film they were in?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
no, I didn't
so
recognize,
the
who?
Little there's three siblings in the film. There's an older sister that's 27, I think they say.
Yeah, 27.
And then there's like a kid, a brother in his late teens, early 20s.
We'll run through the movie in a
second.
Yeah.
And then there's a little sister that's probably 12 or 13, I'd guess, if I had to guess. She's like the braid.
Yeah,
like,
I loved
the,
her.
Yeah. Okay. I just all of a sudden the way she was like pontificating.
Well, yeah, I recognized her too, but I'm like, ah, she can't be in anything.
She's in Home Alone. She's the one that says.
Oh!
She's the one that
you're
says.
You're like the French.
Yeah.
Call. Wait.
Yeah. What does she say?
Oh.
You say it all the time.
Yeah. Kevin, you're with the French girl, les incompetents,
yeah,
right?
Les
incompetents.
Yeah, les incompetents.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's
yes.
her. I just, because she had like, I think she has braids in that movie too. And this is black and white, so she is in braids, but so it looks like lighter blonde hair.
Oh, I love it when that happens.
But I think, yeah, was, Angela, I'm a, Angela,
yeah, look, I wouldn't know
yeah,
her name.
Angela Goethals. But yeah, those are, so honestly, yeah, but look at this mind, people. This is the talent you're going to be getting on this podcast, this vault. Of mine, pathetic memory.
Not so good with the words when they come out. But.
No, not at all. I'm like a visual person. But all right, so I think should we get into what this film is kind of, like a little?
Yeah,
more
we're probably confusing the hell out of people.
Yeah, okay.
Look, it's not an easy film.
No, I wasn't liking it at first, but triple bogey on a par 5 hole. So again, we don't learn this stuff right away. I had so many questions going through it or whatever. But I mean, I loved the black and white and like on the Hudson, and they start out, that's the credit sequence, or on a still shot on a boat or whatever, and you're just seeing, you know, like the Twin Towers back then and stuff like that, all the financial district, lower side of Manhattan. And then they go into this, the first scene is, we meet the writer right away, but he's like shrouded in shadows.
Yeah, you don't see his face. And he's got like a German, almost a Werner Herzog accent.
I think French.
Oh, French accent, you're right.
Let's call it the Rhine.
Yeah, because it's not the... If he's French, okay.
No.
This is actually something I wrote down.
No, it's not Gerard Depardieu.
No. You know what? Maybe we don't know our accents well enough. Mm-hmm. But it's... I wrote down pseudo-European accent.
There you go.
You're right. We do learn that he's French later in the film. But at the beginning, I thought it was like... I wasn't sure if...
French
it
Alps.
It was documentary style, though, because we were just hearing his voice. Mm-hmm. Or this was like his own thoughts.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, sure. We'll put him somewhere in the Rhineland.
The Rhineland, my heritage
between the Rhineland and the French.
Yeah,
border.
So he's
Alsace and Lorraine, perhaps. Yes.
So we meet this guy, Remy, right?
That's Remy's his name. Yeah, I should have indicated that he's French.
Yeah, that's a good point. But we meet him by the back of his head and his voice, and again, I thought he was like a detective at first. I don't know. I was kind of like not intrigued right away, so maybe I wasn't listening too good.
No, you don't. We didn't really know what to expect.
Okay,
this film.
But he's talking to this one guy, and he's what did he worked in advertising? I don't know. He worked with some like you know. He reminded me of this character. He reminded me of the guy that gets killed in Die Hard, the annoying business guy.
Yeah, he's just not a
like. Okay. Early, you know, mid-80s to, like, early
90s. I
think
90s. He was her agent for her book deal.
Yeah, okay. So he was, like, a publisher, kind of.
Yeah,
kinda.
He dealt with art, yeah. Also.
And so we got Remy talking to this, let's just call him a publisher guy, publicist.
Publicist,
that's probably better. And it's just, like, this dialogue scene. And then so we learn when this guy, Remy, gets on the boat that he's writing a screenplay about the... this family that now that it's only the three kids and their cousin, their older cousin, and she raised them for the past 13 years for the most part, because these three kids had parents that when they were on Long Island they went to go buy a lobster dinner and decided they needed a little bit more cash, and so they went to go rob people on a
golf course.
And unfortunately, there was a retired cop that they were robbing. And when they turned their backs, he pulls out their pistol and just shoots them right away. And I kind of wrote down like a little something that I thought that was funny, because the guy later on in the film, Remy is interviewing the cop that shot them or whatever. And he pretty much, this guy, he was just having like a bad day of like losing golf bets and like the pressure of buying his wife a surf and turf dinner after losing like golf bets and stuff like that. And then pretty much he gets, you know, robbed. And so he's just like, well, I'm just going to kill these people. they turn around, they didn't like hit anybody or shoot anybody. And instead of just like saying like freeze or whatever, he just like kills them point blank. Because, I just found it very interesting that he was talking about this surf and turf dinner while these people were going out to buy lobsters. Yeah. It was very shellfish of him.
Wah, wah. Did you write that in your notes?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I came up with that right now.
Good. I was
right
just now. Asking. Just asking.
Yeah.
So, I guess at this point, I just want to make clear, we don't really see these things happen. I don't think we see that part. Right?
No, we just have, that's why I really feel like this is like someone's actual home video footage, because it's just very, I mean, the son says, they like say that the mom was always very, she lost her hearing after a car accident. And so then she bought like the husband bought her a camera.
Is that guy, is the brother or the son, or is his girlfriend deaf as well?
She sounded like it.
She
not
sounded
to be,
like it. That's no, you're right. And I was wondering if that was a parallel there.
Yeah.
Well, so the movie is done more of in a style of Remy is just interviewing people so he can write this screenplay.
Yeah. First eldest sister, then the son, and then maybe the youngest daughter, but then their older Italian cousin that came in to like raise them. And the big thing, also important thing to know about this movie, is that the eldest daughter, Amanda, she ends up writing a book.
She wrote her first book right after they died.
Yeah, so when she was like 14, 15 years old, and it ended up being like a big time hit that obviously affords them this yacht and this like kind of cool lifestyle of living on the East River and the Hudson and all around Manhattan on a boat.
Yeah, she actually gained guardianship of her siblings.
Yeah, she was like, she came, showed up, according to the lawyer, Coltrane says that, you know, she showed up in this little white dress and she just performed for the judge and the jury. And
I think she waved like
a
check of like $100,000. And
yeah, something like that. That, you know, could show that she could provide for her younger siblings, because it was like the brother's and he's got to be 7 years younger than her, so he was, you know, like 7 or 8 years old, and then they had an infant sister or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I never figured out the exact situation, but it was that they have an older cousin that lived in Italy, and then she came. She must have been like,
she's related to Coltrane.
Yeah, and
I don't know if that was, that's what I'm trying to ask. Was that their cousin? Because I thought it was Coltrane's cousin. That he was their lawyer, and he like suggested, because they needed someone to be there. Regardless, it's Italian.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know what? Like the Olive Garden says, when you hear your family.
True. I mean,
so
she, like, she kind of like was the mother.
Became the
to
matriarch.
Them. But the older sister also wanted to kind of like take this motherly role, and that's what this movie's really becomes about. Like,
yeah,
their family.
Yeah, this like little weird, put together
quirky, weird family.
Yeah, so okay, the weirdest thing about the movie, and I wasn't sure at first until like there was like a wide shot scene, but the youngest sister, she never learned how to walk.
Yeah, yeah.
So she just kind of like crawls over. When she's in a sitting position, she uses her legs in very like normal sitting like ways and moving them, but for some reason then she doesn't use them for getting around.
Yeah, well, Remy even mentions like oh, she never learned to walk. And,
yeah, I just thought that was like a Werner Herzog in-depth thing.
And nobody seems to notice.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, spoiler alert, she ends up randomly walking at some point. And she's dancing towards the end. And,
oh, yeah.
And then she even says it, like, in the end, that little note she has, like, I just decided to walk. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it ends with...
It's a very artsy film, guys, in terms of...
Yeah, it ends with her writing a book. It's like she's taking the torch, because then Amanda and Remy end up... having sex, and she decides to go to France with them. The film is like all, it's very random turns here and there, but then the youngest sister, what was her name? Brie. She ends up starting to write her own book, and it's called Chapter One Angel Baby. I love the titles of this film.
You know what's funny, in that what she starts to write, she doesn't capitalize her eyes. And that really bothers me.
I guess, you know, we live in a world of...
Look, this is a weird film. If you're a fan of the Twilight series or things like that, that are just generally, like, easy films...
What a random film.
I'm just saying, this is not the film for you.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not the film for a lot of people, but you know what? You can watch it on YouTube with like no
watch it yourself
advertisements like in between and stuff.
Unless
like
now
that.
They're gonna dump this from YouTube because you know,
I don't think
us,
so.
But
it's
sorry,
Phil Seymour Hoffman's first movie.
Well, it's funny, okay, and we'll get into his scene in a second. But when you click on the YouTube thing, his name is bigger than the title of the movie, like the picture frame.
Yeah, because they eventually realized,
once
YouTube came out and someone put it on there. That was the most cacheable name and searchable name.
Of course. So, like, in theory, when you look at that, you might think he has top billing.
Yeah, there's a huge picture of him on, like, the poster and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's the only picture.
Yeah, it's just a picture of him.
Yeah.
However...
I don't even know if it's a picture of him in the movie.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if that's the case either. Yeah. It's just, like, a young picture of him. So, Kyle, set the scene for Philip Seymour Hoffman's...
All right.
Intro into
so, Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a bandmate named of. So there's the brother. There's the three siblings. You got Amanda, the oldest, Bree, the youngest girl, and in the middle child syndrome, this boy named Satch. Satchel. But they call him Satch.
Satch, yes.
So, and Satch also has a girlfriend
named
Cookie.
Yeah, Cookie. Interesting names.
Who might be either French or deaf. So, not to be mean to the French or the deaf, but
of course
he has a bandmate named Clutch, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, and they're just chilling out, playing some pool,
maybe it's Billiards.
Little bets and stuff like that. So there is a little, you know what, now I'm thinking about it, like, obviously the film, like, money's always very talked about and present and stuff like that. Even the cop that ends up shooting the parents, you know, like, has this whole golf bet worry and doesn't want to pay for meals, and, yeah, it's a very, but, you know, they hand one another $20 bill for this pool bet, but you got Clutch and you got Satch, and then you have Remy come in to do, like, a little, or, you know, he's very fly on the wall throughout the whole film, and then he shoots these vague or plain questions, and I think he's just trying to get a little something out of them, because he personally thinks they're kind of boring.
Yeah, actually, the entire time. I mean, he, at the end of this movie, decides that the story is too boring.
Yeah, he gives up, like, the chance of making money.
Like, $500,000, I think he says that he gives up.
Idiot.
Like, I mean, not to write the screenplay, because they're too boring, and instead he... No. Sleeps with the oldest daughter, and as Kyle mentioned, takes her to France.
We get to see her boobs for a second. this girl, she's very attractive. I went on IMDb, doesn't have any pictures or anything like that. Was never in any other not that this was a big project, but didn't make it. But I thought she was very my type, a very attractive to her. But you know,
hear that, ladies?
Yes,
attractive is Kyle's type.
Yeah. but maybe it was the black and white, I don't know. She just had me this look, this great, like, charisma to her, this old timiness,
like a Monroe, Marilyn Monroe style, even though she didn't articulate in a Marilyn Monroe way.
No, but even like a Breakfast at Tiffany's, like, vibe, like, I don't know, there's just something sultry,
starlet,
classy starlet kind of thing. Anyway, you know what?
I wish I had her name in front of me.
You know what? We're always going to play some clips, some audio clips for you, but this one, he's in a 1 minute scene. How about we just play this 1 minute audio clip for this scene?
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Well, look who's here. Clutch, say hello to Remy Grapp.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this the guy that's writing the movie about you?
Yeah, something like that.
Who's gonna play him?
Who do you think?
Cool, like Spike Lee.
Yeah, right. That's 20. Wanna play another? Double or nothing?
No.
Come on, you can win your money back.
Nah. I gotta pick up Marl at 11 after work. Wanna see you at the Crowbar later?
Maybe. I'm waiting for Cookie.
See you later.
Thanks for the dough, man.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Gravel.
Thanks, Clutch. Pleasure was mine.
And good luck on the movie.
Sure.
So, Kyle, your thoughts?
You just saw me. As we watched that, as they were listening to it or whatever, I started cracking up. I love at the end. Hey, good luck with the movie. Like, it's just...
I mean, this is classic Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, people, this was the first, like, on, you know, like, yeah, okay, you had the Law and Order, but this is a film, this is a master of his craft just at the beginning. You just witnessed, like, a birth of sorts, and I'm not trying to be overly dramatic about it, but that was just, like, I loved it. It was minimal, which, you know, the first thing, his first project ever was a start in or whatever, but that's what it was, and I love it. It was just such a great, you had, right away, he just has that laugh and that smile he had.
Yeah.
It's like a warm, but like, not sinister, but like Eddie Haskell, like, you know, like, just something mischievous.
I think we'll see this character a lot.
Oh, yeah, no, it reminds me of other characters right away.
This is like his buddy character.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like...
No, you've got
that in all positive ways.
No, you've got your Along Came Polly's, and then you have your Talented Mr. Ripley's. This is a little bit closer to like Talented Mr. Ripley, maybe because they're also on a boat. I don't know.
Okay, maybe.
but like,
this is his. It's like that old thing that people say: they're no small parts, just small actors.
Yeah.
Maybe it's hindsight, but I feel like if we just had seen this movie in 1991, he would have stood out.
Yeah, there's just something like, it's just like that little... I love finding those little quirks in the movie that then we just repeat in like joke about and quote and stuff like that. And I forget exactly what movie it is, but I read one time that Meryl Streep, who ended up becoming a collaborator with Philip Seymour Hoffman on stage and screen, saw a movie of his and just like went, wow, who is this guy? So it's like, it's not early, but it's like early enough still. It's before the 2000s. But I forget what role. Definitely will come up in future podcasts. But yeah, like, you know, so the great Meryl Streep just like went and saw this film and saw this performance and went, wow, like who is this guy? And again, like, this is so small, such a random film that plenty of people definitely never saw, but he just has this, I don't know, this warmth to him, and he just, like, that laugh again, and the, just even, I don't know if it was a ad-lib, you know, like, line or whatever, but he's, like, joking around with his buddy Satch and says, you know, to Remy, like, so who are you gonna get to play him? Someone cool like Spike Lee? Like, what is that? I don't know if that's, like, a little shout-out to an independent New York filmmaker at the time.
Yeah, I'm obviously, not sure where that comes from.
But... obviously does not look like the teenage blonde actor that's playing Satch, Spike Lee. But you know what also I found very interesting was, see, like, from a production standpoint, this film and the camera work, very minimal. This film is minimal in all realms, but the film, like, the shots just linger and tend to be, like, these medium-wide shots, just so you get a full frame, you get to see a lot. The people that, you know, if it's like a two-person conversation, you have the two people, usually Remy's back and the person he's talking to. And again, I don't know if that's because of the style or the, you know, lack of the expensive film. Actors do love that because obviously if you see someone performing in one shot, you know, it's one take and you're like, wow. But also it's great to have coverage. And I just found it interesting in this scene, there is this wide shot that you get to see the back of Remy, Clutch, and Satch, and then they go to this great kind of low angle from, I believe, like the hip of Remy looking at Clutch, at Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. And I just thought that was, you know, just from the whole standpoint of the film, and then just the fact that this is the actor that we're focusing on, that they have this second shot. And I said to you again when we were watching, when you guys were listening, that it's just something, it's simple, but it was beautiful because, again, it's just, I don't know, it's just like, it's one more shot I got to see of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Very true. Very true.
So
now I'm going to be asking this on the podcast a lot, but do you, and this is kind of different because it's his first one, and odds are he probably did this because he needed the money and wanted to be in a good film.
Sure.
But do you think this is the kind of role that he was gravitating to? Or do you think this is the kind of role that he did this and then he started to get roles similar to this? Because later we see him take on leads and take on more characters. Not that this isn't a character, but this is a more grounded character, obviously.
Sure. Well, I've read multiple times he never thought, and a lot of people never thought, that he was exactly a leading actor, even in, like, some of his lead roles. Like, he always said, like, there's some great quote of him, not going to do it justice, but he just always said, like, it doesn't matter how many lines I have, I'll always make it seem like I'm more in the background. Like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, but at the same time, he has such, like, bravados to him that, like, you know, booming voice at some points. But to really, like, answer your question, I think that those were the roles, and sure, you could have crazier characters or crazier dialogue, crazier story, but those were the roles that he was more interested in. And yeah, so I think he just kind of took that role because he auditioned for it and he got accepted, like any young actor. I don't exactly know how old he was at the time, early 20s, 22.
He looks young.
Yeah. We could easily do the math right now. But
it's but not, yeah, a math podcast, guys.
No, definitely not.
You're not talking with two mathematicians, certainly.
No, or spellers or any grammatical people. But anyway,
or anything of use to...
history.
History.
That was our only good gen ed. but... So, you know, to put this out there, Brian and I have known one another since high school, so that's how we know that.
In many ways.
That's rude. but, yeah, no, so I this is definitely, this is a role that he was just always interested, no, okay, not this role. It's because it's one minute, you know, in a whatever film. But still, yes, like, I think he would have, I would have loved to have seen him in the role of Satch.
Yeah, I was thinking that he could have done Satch.
He could have done Satch. There was nothing that...
No
that,
offense to the actor
No, but that
Satch.
Was the weakest, he was the weakest link in the movie. I'm not, we're not going to, this isn't a podcast about getting too analytical, but I have no qualms of saying what I did and didn't like, and probably the thing I liked least about the film was the acting of the character Satch. And so, since, again, love Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he shares, you know, like, the same age bracket as in a scene with Satch, I totally think that he could have played Satch and been much more interesting and just seeing, the, you know, because Satch is, he's rich and privileged, had a tragic past, obviously, but then is in, like, this, you know, punk rock metal type band
yeah.
Just from, like, the outfit that Clutch is wearing and stuff like that. It's great. He's wearing, like, wristbands
it's
and bandanas.
Something you'd see in the 80s and early 90s in, like, the Lower East Side.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely in the realm of the roles that he was interested in and then used to getting for quite some time. I don't want to misspeak. Capote, I really think, is, like, his first, like, you know, lead role, and that's the only one that freaking Oscar for.
There are some others before, but there's nothing that's of that caliber.
Exactly. So, again, it's just, like, you had a very long time of 91 to Capote, I want to say, is, like, 04 or something like that. 05, maybe 06 even. I don't know. But,
maybe 07.
Yeah, exactly.
Possibly
08. No. I know it was the same one as Joaquin Phoenix Walk the Line, because Joaquin Phoenix definitely wasn't going to win it because whatchamacallit won it for Ray the year before.
Another debate for another day.
Yes. But so all I'm saying is definitely the first 10 to like 13 years of, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman's career, he was playing from one scene roles to these ancillary characters to great strong supporting actors.
And trust me, there's some of his our favorite roles of
oh
his,
yeah
so
no
this
not,
is not
I'm not
a,
knocking him
no
but,
not at all
you know that's why like I mean you know and that's where you get to be you know well they, not that you know they even say like in comics the villains are more interesting than you know the superheroes and not you know saying that, you know, I mean, he does play some villains in some movies, but but that's just, you know, when you're not the lead actor and you don't have, like, almost like that pressure on you, you get to have more fun sometimes, and this is a guy that, if he's having fun, which I believe he almost always did, he's just enormous.
At least it comes off that way, that he's having fun.
Yeah.
We'll never know his true process.
I think he was probably very analytical and very concerned, and he was an artist, and obviously, you know, a man with some deep and dark thoughts going on in his head, and that's
demons.
A lot of demons, and you know, unfortunately, supposedly some of the most brightest and funniest and cleverest of people out there that is the realm that they live in, and but that's what you also then get. You get this guy with many fears, but then at this moment of maybe once hearing the film rolling behind the camera or someone saying, you know, action, he just like I almost, you know, that just someone taking over his body, you know, it's Will Ferrell in the old school in the debate.
what do they call that? Like he's possessed.
Yeah.
Now, I was curious to find out more about this film, like, you know, like things like how he was cast or like what, you know, his interest level or, you know, stuff that we're so spoiled with now.
Yeah, well, you're not going to, there's no DVD to get that commentary.
No, then there's no like pre-production websites that.
Yeah. It was on IMDb. The only trivia was this is Philip Seymour Hoffman's first film.
Yeah, I mean, the limited information here, it doesn't bother me that much. But you know what's great? There's an old-fashioned charm about that because we live in an age where...
Yeah, it's pre-internet, and it's like, you know...
Yeah. I mean, now, you and I are guilty of this as anybody, of just, like, knowing...
I'm guilty of everything.
But knowing every step of pre-production.
Oh, yeah.
Almost every step of just when a movie comes out, mm-hmm. what reviews it got, what people thought about it, you know, what reception it has, Facebook friends telling you what, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, I try not to let that harm my opinion or get
too deep. But you can't, sometimes you can't let it, you can't help it, you know. Sometimes.
Oh, no, you can't help it, but, like, at the same time, it's just like, it's like I've got an itch that I'm just like, it's like, you know, I can't remember having the chicken pox, but everyone's like, don't scratch it. You know, it's just like, ah, it's just like, you know, like, you just want to, like, read more and more, and sometimes it's bad when you've got, like, you know, big films out there, like Star Wars, that want to keep secrets, and you read those things, but then you just, like, know these intimate little things about these indie films, too. But this film, this is a film that, like, a guy, you know, again, Amos Poe made it, and,
Teletubby.
Ew. But, yeah, he made it, and he's just like, he showed some places, and he's like, hey, if you're interested, come here. If not, fuck
But again,
off.
This is, you know, all, like, speculation on our part. It's, that's,
yeah,
what,
sure,
it, that's,
yeah.
That's what it
but
feels
I love
like.
It. I love it.
But, like, you could take any movie from the 70s, like, mm-hmm. like one of your favorites, a Taxi Driver, right?
Sure.
You weren't alive when that was. You didn't know anything about the pre-production. But now we can look up so much. There are books written just
wow.
about Taxi Driver, right?
Okay.
Again, much better film. But
yeah.
regardless.
It's from Scorsese.
Now we'll, like, there's a charm about not knowing, too.
Yeah.
It's like, you ever, like, not have your cell phone?
It's like a one and done.
Yeah, at the beginning
it's a
you have
one
anxiety,
night stand.
And then, yeah. That's but, like, ever not have your cell phone and, like, there's an anxiety about it, and then there's a freedom of not
oh,
being
yeah.
able to use it, you know?
Oh,
it,
I love that.
It's almost like, I was like, oh, I want to know more, but this would be, I want to know more. But now it's like, you know, I like being able to fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. I like speculating on how this director stumbled on Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah, we're not going to get much more of this, I don't believe.
No. Everyone needs to know everything nowadays.
No,
it's
but
obnoxious.
I mean, even for Philip Seymour Hoffman, he kind of
goes pretty
mainstream pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean,
like, he's not starring in these films, but
no, but, like, he's got a couple of, I think, again, his career definitely, like, you know, not saying, like, every next film is a better film, but it kind of becomes, like, every next film is, for the most part, like, a bigger film. So, like, I think in the beginning we'll still have, like, a few, you know, like, more little surprises.
There is a Wikipedia page, but it really doesn't say much.
Huh. Okay. Well, I have one.
Basically, through the Wikipedia page... Uh-huh. I was able to click links, and, like, the link of the lead actor. What's his name again? Eric Mitchell, something like that?
The guy that plays Remy.
The guy that plays Remy, yeah.
Okay.
And kind of, you know, and the director, Amos Poe, and he kind of more just talked about, like, the scene that these guys were in at the time. Now, this one's in the 90s, and I guess this scene, it's called No Wave Cinema, apparently.
Ooh, you know what? That's, like, something I don't know,
Yeah, I don't know a ton about it either, but I was looking, and it was really cool. Like we were saying before, like, Jim Jarmusch came out of that, Steve Buscemi, apparently. And it's kind of related to, like, it's like a little post-Warhol, but it's related to just no-wave music, which is related to new-wave music, of course.
And, hey, well, you know I got that Blondie...
yeah, I mean, this is like...
The Blondie sticker
like
on the back of my van.
This is the age of Debbie Harry. This is the age of
Talking Heads.
These are people who, like, they encounter each other
in
the village.
I'm sorry,
and
this is why New York
City.
Is cooler than L.A. Boom. This is why it is. Don't back out. You don't like L.A., even though he's never been there. I've been there. I don't like it.
Can't knock it till I try it, right? I just don't.
No, you can knock it all you want.
I don't have any desire to try it.
That's what's cool about New York is, like, moments like this. We just kept having from cool bands and this. What's this movement called again?
No Wave Cinema.
No Wave Cinema.
Yeah,
so,
basically,
again,
I think I meant touch on a little bit before.
I'm sure if I went to NYU Tisch, I would have known. like Philip Seymour Hoffman went to.
Yes.
I would know much better about No Wave, but.
Like I was touching on before, I think in the intro, that these, you know, there were movies that were shown, at least at the time, I don't know about this one because it's a little late, but during like the late 70s, 80s part, there were movies that were just shown at like community theaters in St. Mark's
awesome.
Or like Astor Place, yeah. or even like place like CBGB, which is mainly known for rock, but apparently, again, through my light research, they used to show films there.
That's so freaking
God,
cool.
I would love to just
imagine
be
like
in New York
being
in
there
that
for
era.
Like a movie night, and then your like favorite band or like a whatever little band comes in, you know, and then all of a sudden they become,
yeah,
I don't know what band then came up that played probably there in the and then played in the 90s.
Well, the 90s, yeah, a little different probably like towards the end of the scene. But, I mean, it's definitely a product of this.
You think like Nirvana ever played there back in the day?
Nah, probably not. I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about Nirvana. It's turning into a music podcast. Yeah. yeah, I mean, like, this is a New York film, New York moment.
Well, didn't you... Yeah, and then you said to me before we were recording... And that Eric Mitchell, so that's his name.
Yeah.
He is a director as
well. Oh, he's a director as well in this movement. And he,
what's that cool thing about Jim Jarmusch? What was he?
Oh, yeah, Jim Jarmusch, apparently, I forgot I mentioned this to you before we started. Jim Jarmusch was apparently a sound guy on some
of
his earlier films.
Like, what a cool world.
Like, what a cool movie. Like, these guys helping each other out, making movies.
I'd be glad if I was just a fluffer. He was a sound guy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean... I want to
see his new film, Patterson, by the way.
Definitely.
I think that's playing in Montclair or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
that cool. would have been...
Ironically.
Did, yeah. did Jarmusch and Hoffman ever collaborated?
I don't think so. That would have been really cool.
That would have been a great...
You don't see Hoffman work with many of these people again, you know?
No, his biggest collaborator by far is P.T. Anderson.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge part of this podcast. I can't wait to talk about.
Of course.
It's going to be so good.
I gotta be honest with you, I kind of enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I was not expecting much.
No, certainly not.
And, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, we're not gonna get into the little technical problems and stuff like that.
We promise not to do that.
Yeah, like, again, you know, the one performance I wasn't too fond of, but everyone else's was, like, great. It was like, I don't know, it was just this one simple story in a simple time and, like, you know, just like simple location. It's just I don't know, it's just, you know.
Interesting dialogue. It was interesting. And
yeah, I had the hots for the older sister.
Yes. Would I see it again? I don't know, maybe not.
Maybe it's easy enough to access and it's just like I'll probably go back and I'll just like watch it. But I mean, of course, like, you know, I could go back and watch, you know, just the minute of his performance. But let me just put it this way. I love that he was in it, but there's enough in that movie to get me back to, like, stick and, you know, like, watch it again someday. But I would definitely tell people to, you know,
especially if you're a fan of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Check it out, even if it's just that scene. Just definitely, it's the genesis of all great things to come. Yeah.
Well, I was completely wrong. So, I mean, there's going to be a couple of, like, ones up ahead, but his next film is A Scent of a Woman.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to...
Whoops.
So, right. Speaking of which, hope you'll tune in next week.
Yeah, for an episode about A Scent of a Woman. Pacino.
Which is basically what the whole movie's about, right?
Yeah, possibly. He talks like this. The rest of his career, he finally won an Oscar, and the man didn't stop talking like that, I guess, the rest of his career, and just became more and more of a rooster. But but I don't know. It's I'm looking forward to. I just remember his character being, you know, it's a film.
Yeah,
so,
I gotta rewatch it.
Yeah, that's also something. So we kind of stated in this, obviously, that we had not seen it before. That's something
I've seen it. I'm sure you've seen it, right?
Yeah, so I'm sorry. To be clear, I'm saying like I had never seen Triple Bogey.
No, and obviously I hadn't either.
Yeah, so we were again pleasantly surprised to easily find it online. That's what we're gonna have to do for a couple of.
Never seen it, never heard of it, frankly.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. So definitely gonna happen for a couple of his earlier films, but then I'm very positive while looking at his IMDb that how many of his films I've seen, and I've definitely seen the next film, A Scent of a Woman, or I'm sorry, Scent of a Woman, not A Scent. Scent of a Woman. And
specific.
Yes.
Well.
But I haven't seen it in a while. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Neither have I. And I certainly wasn't seeing it in the prism of looking for Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. And I remember he, like, so this is going to fall into like kind of his, this is going to be almost like a clean cut version, I feel like, of this character. But then if I recall correctly, he's a preppy douche. So, looking forward to watching some, P.S. Hoffman being a preppy douche.
Yeah, I hope you guys liked the first episode.
Yes, welcome. Thanks for listening. This is just a passion project of ours, so hopefully you enjoy
it. Yep, I'm excited to get into the nitty-gritty next.
Ooh.
Yes, the nitty-gritty.
Does he say that?
That's a Nacho Libre reference.
That is
not a contest.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, so what is our first official contest of the...
The contest will be more Philip Zimmer Hoffman directed.
But we'll throw it out there.
But we'll throw it out there just for fun. Yeah. Just to test if anyone can tell us. You could email us at...
psilovehoffman@gmail.com.
Or feel free to comment or even send us a private message for our Facebook page, which is psilovehoffman. Just search that, you'll find it.
Yep.
And I don't know, we'll pick a randomly a lucky winner and give them a Philip Zimmer Hoffman DVD of our choosing.
Yep.
Perhaps Scent of a Woman.
Looking forward to it, people. And make sure to listen to any of the podcasts at cageclub.me.
Yeah, I mean, please like our podcast, share our podcast, tell your friends. We want you to listen.
Yeah.
We have these conversations all the time.
It's a passion project. We want people to enjoy it.
If we didn't want you to listen, we wouldn't be with microphones right now.
Yeah. And just be nerding out and be like, oh, I liked him in that film.
on that note.
We're rambling into the night.
Thanks so much. See you next week, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for tuning in. Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles.